Sorry. You're solid. Hello. my name is Dax Franklin Hicks. I live in Tucson. And my wife is here with me, Nancy. Been together for 18 years. I know I look 18, so that gets confusing. And we have a grown son who has looked older than me his entire life. Our son Angelo came to us when he was a teen from First Congregational in UCC. I got a lot out of that church. And he's the absolutely most kind, loving, giving human being ever. So I'm very proud to be his dad. But when we would go out to eat, the waiter would offer him alcohol at the age of 16 because he looked so much older. But if I ordered something, I'd get carded sitting right next to him. So there's that. So I want to talk about whatever that moment is for you where everything changed. It wasn't expected. I don't know you, but you've had that moment. I don't know what has prompted you to get out of bed and come here, but that thing that has prompted you to do that is a bit of a crack in the door of our hearts. And we're constantly, when meeting one another, wondering, is it safe with you? Am I safe with you? We're constantly looking for that. So what happens when you're in the presence of someone who wasn't safe? When you're with someone who, for whatever reason, wants to damage? How do you get to open up that door again? I have had that lived experience rather recently, December 2015. I had a friend who I trusted sexually assault me. And it was a very violent assault. And what I found that came after that was this. Vigilance in living that didn't allow sleep. Because when something like that occurs, your mind goes back again and again and it does this thing. It makes stuff up about what signs you didn't see, what signs you did see, what it meant about you. Instead of it being this moment, it becomes your story. And the things we tell ourselves about things that happen are often more compelling than the actual event. And that's where we hurt, that's where we go within more. It's in the story after. So the story after does this protective thing. It creates a sense in you that you have more power than you do. Because if you had more power in that moment, if you made the wrong choices in that moment, you can make sure that doesn't happen again. The biggest thing that happens when we are unsafe is an awareness of our powerlessness. And that is enough to cause insanity. It truly is. It's enough to make it impossible to leave your home, to connect. But that fear response that is awoken is necessary in your life still, but it's out of balance. During the meditative part, did you guys hear a noise? It was shrill, wasn't it? I forgot the words that were just said that invited me into a space because a shrill sound. The sounding of alarm is necessary. But when it gets sounded and it ended up being right, it's impossible to just turn that right back off. And it still rings. The solution isn't to eradicate fear, because you still need that, by the way. It keeps you going. It keeps you alive. It keeps you moving. Keeps you running if you are in danger once again. So how do we move then from a space where everything is possibly awful to sometimes awful things happen? Most of my life has been rather remarkably wonderful. When we are harmed in some way, or left alone in some way, or made to feel insecure physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of it, when we suddenly become aware of our fragility, how do we trust that we're sturdy enough again? And that's that work. And it's all through the stories we tell ourselves. Which means I hope we're telling ourselves stories, and I hope we're telling those stories to others. Because I wouldn't have known I was making stuff up about my own value, my own worth, unless I said it out loud to someone else and they said, no, no, this is what I see. Trauma and pain like that causes disconnection from you. I can't know you if I am afraid all the time. I can't be here if I'm afraid all the time. It's not possible. So some of the things I had, some of the things that occurred for me during that time period, I didn't sleep for about 6 months for more than an hour to 2 hours. I was very injured. So my life became about strengthening and replenishing my very being, right? My physical being. And more things happened. 3 months later, we found out I was HIV positive. And about 8 months later, I was diagnosed with cancer. Chemo, the whole bit. And it was all piling on. And something happened during that time that I'm surprised I said yes to, which was, hey, do you want to write for a blog? I guess. Let's see what happens now. I don't know what you're going to get. But it helped me to think of what was happening with me and how that happens with all at some point, in some way. We are all recovering from something. That's the very nature of living. Things break and we recover. Things hurt and we tend. We are constantly in recovery from something all the time. So when we have that lived experience of fear, we don't sleep well because there's a sense of vigilance. When we have that lived experience of fear, we see through a lens that everyone could possibly be dangerous. And it changes the way we hear words. It changes the way we feel emotions. All of that changes. And that's the painful part, is what was before and what is now. Loss is hard. The reality is, I don't ever get to go back before December 2015. I am not someone who believes in any way, shape, or form that suffering is some kind of spiritual test or a blessing even. Suffering. Because of suffering, I might see things a little bit different, though. That's not always good, by the way. Right? Like, I share the good stuff, and you're like, oh, you're very wise. No, because there's all of these other things that I say out loud to my wife, and she's like, stop. Right? She's more loving than that. So, it starts to look like this. I don't want to feel this way anymore. It's hurting too much. What can I do? So then I start taking some steps. There's a concept of total pain. Total pain is when there's physical pain, emotional pain, psychological in general, spiritual pain, and social pain. And when all of those are present at the same time, you will not have access to objectivity until one of them gives a little bit. And it's isolating, and it's lonely. But as one of them gives, you start to feel a little bit of relief, and you start to live in a new normal in a way. You start to laugh maybe again. You start to be with others again. It's rather beautiful if it wasn't so hard. It's beautiful when you're out of it. But when you're in it, it's painful and dark. But fear is necessary. Now, fear all the time is not necessary, by the way. If fear could be personified and came into this room right now and sat down and was like, "That looks like my Aunt Karen. She was mean to me. Let's go. She's probably going to hurt us." And we would know that, right? That personification. It could never stay still. It can never be at rest. But we still need it. Kinda. So, in that, I don't think it's helpful to us when the alarm blares all the time. Because the alarm always blaring means you will never know when it's supposed to be blaring, right? And it's exhausting. And it's not a state that we get to keep. Our bodies will start to break down. Our living will start to break down if that's the only thing that we're doing. So very much, the way out of fear is a turning to. A turning to. If I'm alone and isolated in something, my first way out of that is a turning to, and it starts like this. I feel scared all the time. That's a turning to. I'm afraid everything's going to happen again, and I'm going to lose everything again. That's a turning to. You don't find your way out of fear if you ignore that it exists. It's still going to blare. And when the meditative moments come, you will hear shrill fear, a turning to one another, a turning to connection once again. That looks different from person to person, but that's ours, that's our living, that's our being, and that's our way out. It is such a relief when you feel loved. It is such a relief when you can rest. It is such a relief whenever you can say, "That thing that happened once. It's not the only thing that ever happened. Look at all the other happenings." The fear is necessary, but it's only effective if we know when the alarm is blaring that it's for real. So how do we get out of that? When I first found out I was sick, I linked that to the assault very strongly. So an action happened. As a result, I got sick. Yes. But what ended up happening is I felt like he was constantly killing me still. I felt like, well, now he's in every part of me, this act. That's not true, is it? It's my blood. It's my body. I gave him a lot more presence and power than was real. The falsehood truth thing, that was beautiful. Because fear isn't accurate. Ever. It's just responsive and reactive. It doesn't get to tell you words. It says, run. It says, go. Whatever you experienced in the moment of fear has nothing to do with what actually happened, because we're not fully present to the moment And that's when the storytelling comes in for ourselves. I don't think that's a bad thing. Those stories, and I'm not talking about making things up on purpose, but those stories tell you a little something about what you did with that experience. So I want to illustrate for you. Where am I at on time? I have no concept of time up here. Is it still Sunday? All right. So I have a nephew. His name is Beckham. I can't wait until he's old enough. I can give him a bendy straw and say, bend it like Beckham. I'm really looking forward to that. He is 3 years old now. And he's pretty much the best human I know. He's funny. He's full of, like, incredible moments. And my brother lived in San Francisco, recently moved back to Arizona, which I'm so happy. So in October, right, 2018, my wife and I went to just spend some time with them. We were there for a week and a half. They were not working. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful time. And so pretty soon, it became evident that Beckham preferred Nancy over me. He wasn't shy about sharing that all the time. I think he's probably right. I agree, by the way. He's a smart little guy. My wife's name is Nancy. He calls her Antsy. Tell me that's not the best thing ever. No one ever correct that ever. That's the best. Aunt Nancy is Antsy. So it became that he would invite me and my brother and my brother's wife, Jasmine, to leave so he could just spend some time with Antsy. So we all were starting to get a little jealous of this whole situation, not just me. We go to the park one day, the park right by his school. San Francisco is so beautiful. So that walk was beautiful. The time outside was beautiful. He's playing on the playground. My brother, Nancy, and I are just kind of hanging out near each other. We look over, and I can't see Beckham for a second. Then I realize, oh, he's laying on the ground. And he starts yelling, Uncle Davin! Uncle Davin! My heart, it just like, oh, I'm on! No one move. And I looked over at my brother and Nan, and they're like, yeah, go get him, go get him. And I run over to him. I'm like, what? And he's like, where's Antsy? Well done. She was standing right next to me, and you know that. Shy little smile. About 2 days later, we went back to that same park. This time it was my sister-in-law, Jasmine, my brother, Casey, and Beckham, and I. Nan was resting. We're just hanging out. We're just enjoying the day. And my little nephew's best friend was there. They were clinging to each other down the slides, which I could watch all day, every day, laughing, joyful. My brother and I were sitting on a bench nearby, and we were talking about how all those people around us that were playing this Pokemon Go, which it's very big in San Francisco. So everyone's outside and they're moving, but no one's like looking up. They're all seeing life through a phone. Have you seen this? It just feels strange. It just feels like, and I remember saying, well, at least they're moving, but they're so oblivious. You know, like they wouldn't even know what's going on. And many of them had headphones in and they were just walking, trying to find Pokemon. I don't know. I know it feels like I should be able to tell you what that is. I don't. It's something. It's a character or something. I look up, and there's a bunch of people running towards us. And at first, we're thinking nothing. Like, oh, what are they doing? Within 2 seconds, I saw terror. And then I heard, gun, 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 run. We stood up and grabbed the baby. It didn't matter if the baby was yours, you grabbed the babies and you ran. It was immediate. It was, you knew what to do. Get away. Go, 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 go. We got to the street and cars going as fast as possible over to the park, these police cars, residential roads, easily 60 miles per hour. this is real, this is happening, doesn't get to play right there. Because you're not in that moment. It doesn't make any sense. Your brain is not going to let you be in that moment. And I looked at my nephew's face as he looked around trying to figure out what just happened. He's listening to everything around him. He's open and curious about what he's seeing. And as he saw crying, his little face cried, start crinkling up. As he saw fear, his little face was fearful. So that became what we focused on. And we walked him away as people came and were being told, don't go in there, there's someone with a gun. And you hear everyone talking to each other. Oh, it was on the soccer field. It was a parent. It was this. I saw it. No, I didn't. Did you hear a gunshot? That's all happening. So we're holding him and we're looking at this little baby and we're talking to him about things that are not happening right now. Because we didn't know what was happening right now. And what are you going to say to a three-year-old? Soon, we were clear to walk away because you don't know where it's coming from, right? They want you to stay put somewhere safe. As we walked in silence, him in the stroller got about two blocks away when my sister-in-law just cried. And my brother holds her, and my nephew says, what's wrong, Mommy? So she takes another deep breath, and we keep going, right? No one's talking. Two more blocks. My brother Casey wraps his arms around me, hugs me tight. Two more blocks. We stop, we hold him, we play with him a little bit because this is so crazy. It meant we had to stop a lot on this very short journey to connect. And in that connection, we were saying this, are you safe? We got back to the house, and my wife was waking up. And we stood there quietly, and I knew I wanted to tell her what happened, but I didn't know what happened, really. And my nephew says, a man with a gun, Park. He had a gun, he was gonna shoot people. His gun. My wife leans forward, and she's thinking he's telling a funny story, he's talking about a play. And we started to fill in the blanks. And of course, went to the news, went to all of this other things, not seeing anything. Then we looked and we turned on meditation for 5 minutes. We just did it. And we sat down and we did it with him. And we told him how to breathe. Breathe. And he took these big breaths. After the meditation, we talked to him. And he told us about how a man had a gun and he was going to kill everyone. And we talked about that and how he was safe and how that part was over. And we don't know what happened yet. We don't know. And then we laughed with him for a little bit. We played a little bit. Then we did some breathing again and we talked later. And we ate really good food. Checking the news. Turns out, no one had a gun. It was a mistake. It was an argument between two people who didn't know each other. One said they had a gun. But we ran, and my sister Jasmine said this. I just felt like, well, of course that's going to happen at some time. It felt like, oh, this is that thing. Of course that's happening. So we work fear into expectation so that we can what? Understand what's happening. You just want to be congruent with a moment. That's what you're after. You want body, mind, and spirit to be one. And in a fearful moment like that, you don't get to have that. So we spent the day with all of that. We talked about what are we going to do tomorrow with him? What does he want to do? We all decided very early, we need to go back to the park. Like that's going to be important. Before we went to bed that night, he would talk about it again, and now it was starting to change the story. He was very brave. He was very brave. He wasn't scared. We're all so brave. We're not going to get hurt. Oh, what a beautiful story. Yes, tell me more. You are so brave. Right before he went to sleep, he said, the man with the fire gun is after me. After me. Ah, that killed me. After me. He's three. He thinks someone's after him. No one's after you, buddy. You're with us now. No one's after you. That probably will never happen to him again, I hope. And we didn't want it to be the thing that did happen that took him into places of fear. And the only way we knew to do that was to get back in our own bodies. As we cared for ourselves, we taught him that. The next day, we went to the park, all was well. The following day, he went to school. He saw his best friend that was sliding with him. Beckham ran to her, and they embraced super tight. Beckham says, the man with gun gone. She says, we safe now. He says, wanna play. The man with the fire gun is not always after us. Things happen and it breaks us a bit. The way forward is a turning to. If we could personify fear, we would see how ridiculous and not mindful it is, frantic. If we could personify love, I think it would look a lot like those two kids. I also think it would look a lot like right now. Whatever the step is towards one another, that's the loving way. And I get to know you, and you get to know me, and it's safe. Whatever has happened, it happened. It's not still happening.